It me, it Ben, your friend Ben, who is me.
Hello, Ben. I am Brett. I am also your friend.
I don't like anyone here right now.
That should be the intro.
Episode 79 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Craig, on a scale from 1 to Malik Smith, how turbulent was your day today?
I'm going to say, ooh, that's good. I'm going to say, like, Mitch Haniger.
Oh, wow. I'm very sorry.
It's a callback.
Yeah, you know, if you're in trouble, you can talk to me. I didn't realize you were in a Mitch Haniger state of mind. Brett, if you had...
I'm just excited that we're doing this on schedule.
Oh, it's really great. You just stole my thunder. I was going to ask Brett to pick one adjective to describe what it's like recording Tino on schedule for the first time in a half year.
I assume he'd say Haniger, but, you know.
I'm really tempted to go with Haniger, even though I don't like doubling up responses.
Mm-hmm.
But I am going to say I'm going to say Billy Hamilton running into the left center field gap.
Well, when you're right, you're right.
That is one adjective.
Yes, that's exactly. If we were going to do a false precision round for adjectives, that would fit right in.
To be fair, they would all be hyphenated.
Ben, if you were going to pick one player to represent this opening, who would it be?
Probably Brandon Wood, because it felt good at first, and already I hate it.
Yeah,
I just hate it a lot.
There's a lot of miss and a lot of regret.
Exactly. The Brandon Wood story and the Tino story. All right. Well, we are going to kick off our yearly... I don't know what to call this. I never have a good name for it. Basically, positional series, our weekly positional series, where up on BP we have articles for everything, pretty much any sort of fantasy league you could play in. We have an article that we promise at least half pertains to it. So we have rankings per position for 2017, three-year rankings, dynasty league rankings. I do a get-to-know series where I go over all the different fantasy prospects. We have AL and NL-only rankings, I think. I might have just made that up. And sleeper picks. Anything your heart desires for fantasy, you can find on BP. And if not, you can always just send bat signals to Craig. So because this is the first week, we are going to start where we always start, which is with catchers. And Brett, I know you wrote this catching list, and it's going up on BP tomorrow, Friday?
It is up tomorrow, and will be up when anyone listens to this, yeah.
Okay, so it's going up tomorrow, so... we'll do what we have normally done, but perhaps this year without the strained key metaphors, and I will simply pass the keys to you.
Awesome. You mean like now?
I was thinking wow. Since we're like recording now.
This would be like we're walking in the car and Ben like throws the keys over to Brett and he just sails by his face and he keeps walking for like 8 steps before he's like, oh, were those the keys?
Was Brandon Wood too complimentary? starting to feel that way.
Are we going to go full Dallas McPherson?
I think maybe Mark Reynolds, I thought. He's the blind one.
That's true. Brett just went full Mark Reynolds on us.
All right, so let's start with the top of the catchers list here. We'll start with Craig. You know, there's a lot of discussion as to who the top catcher is. You know, are you still in favor of Buster Posey as the top fantasy catcher in dynasty formats?
Yeah, I am, and I think, you know, we've obviously been doing this for a decent number of time. I don't think it's going to surprise anyone that I will opt towards a guy who can produce now and in the future, and is at the top of the position right now. I know that there's a lot of discussion about, you know, Gary Sanchez. I think it's a little premature. Obviously, he had an incredible half. I think the league can adjust. I don't, you know, he was never that good even as a prospect, and he was a prospect for a really, really long time. So I'm interested to see how and if the league adjusts back to Sanchez, and I think you have to kind of bake that risk into his ranking and into his projection. At the same time, you know, there are things trending down with Posey, and they're still really good, but they are moving down. And I don't know that you need to be concerned about that, but I think you need to be aware of it. And I will say that, you know, if you're in a non-competitive point in your contention cycle, if you traded Posey for Sanchez, I think that that's defensible. I think there are reasons around to do that. So I think those are probably the two names I saw the most when we were kind of debating this between BP and over at TDG. And, you know, I think there are reasons for either, but I lean Posey at this point.
Sounds good. So Ben, staying on Posey, so two questions for you that I think are going to gauge the long-term interest here and how much you agree or disagree. Over under on 35 home runs for Buster Posey between 2017 and 2018?
35 was your over under?
35.
I will go slightly under.
Okay. And 2019, does Buster Posey still have catcher eligibility?
Yes.
Okay. So by those answers, am I correct to assume that you would agree that Buster Posey is the top guy on the board?
I would, and I believe I have a first take or ESPN-ish hot take for you.
Uh-huh.
Are you ready? Are you near something cool?
I hold on. I will get near something cool.
Okay. I believe Gary Sanchez is the most overrated player in Dynasty Baseball right now.
There you go. Sizzle.
Incredibly good second half, but that's not really who he was as a prospect, aside from, you know, maybe I think we all thought the power could get there. But I don't believe in that average, and I think we're going to see more swing and miss when, as Craig pointed out, the league figures it out. So, you know, I still think Gary Sanchez is a good dynasty asset, but I think people need to slow their roll quite a bit.
So let's jump right into the next question. Would you take Jonathan Lucroy over Gary Sanchez in a dynasty league right now?
A little bit of a cop out. Contention cycle would come into play. In a 3-year, it's not even close for me. I'd take Lucroy. Dynasty, yeah, flip a coin, gun to my head, I guess I'll take Lucroy still.
Okay. Craig, do you think that, do you have Sanchez ahead of Lucroy?
No, I would have Lucroy ahead of Sanchez.
Okay, but you guys would both,
I think all three are close. Like, I don't share Ben's hot take. I understand where it's coming from. I think all three guys, and just because of age and how catchers break down, I think there's a lot of, I do think that there's, it's a relatively tight-knit group among those three.
Where, now, if Sanchez had come up and hit 255 with 12 home runs, rather than about 300 with 20 home runs, would he still be in this tier for you?
No, probably not. But that's not what happened. And what he did was remarkable. And I don't think you can throw it out. It's the only major league sample we're working with. And it wasn't insubstantial. I mean, it wasn't 2 weeks, you know, it wasn't a hot 2 weeks. So no, it wouldn't be the same, but what can you do?
That's how hot my take was. Craig's lungs have been scorched by my, I don't even know. It's not even Gary Sanchez hate, my Gary Sanchez moderatism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
dying.
So, so while Craig is dying, let's go back to Ben. So, in 2017, how many home runs do you think Gary Sanchez hits, given the full season of at bats?
26.
Okay. Yeah, I'm right around there. I'm right in the 25 to 30 range, I think. I think that's reasonable. Yeah, I'm in complete agreement that the batting average is a real risk. And I think if you're not factoring in that Gary Sanchez may very well be a 240 or 250 hitter this year and maybe possibly forever, I think that's a mistake. But I think the power is what keeps his value relatively safe, and I think that's something that's been consistent from when he was a prospect. I mean, that's who Gary Sanchez was supposed to be,
right? And you know, people will hear this and get mad, but projecting a 24-year-old catcher to hit between 25 and 30 home runs in his first full professional season is a compliment.
it's a big fucking deal. I mean, there may not be a catcher who gets to 25 home runs this year. And we'll see it as we go through this list, but it's a shitty list.
Yeah, no, it's not good. It's not good.
So just before I died, what I was going to say was, I think that's a good hypothetical, Brett. But I think part of the reason that you can't throw it out is because a lot of times power is the last thing to come for hitters, and especially at the big league level. So the fact that he did hit that many home runs like says something about his potential power production in the in the immediate future, whereas mm-hmm. if he hit 12, you probably think, okay, like I can push that to 18 over a full season, factoring in some growth and potentially some reaction from the league, and then you know he'll be at 25 by the next year, you know, but at that point he's 26 going on 27, and you kind of have a different trajectory. If we think he can hit, as you guys were saying, 25 to 30 right now, that's a big deal, right? So that's why he gets that bump in terms of ranking immediately.
Yeah. So let's seamlessly transition into a first-year player who did hit 12 home runs in 2016 and talk about Wilson Contreras, who is who's number four on my list. The big question with Contreras is, at least for me, is how much power he's going to end up showing in the majors. Craig, what do you think is a realistic expectation for him in 2017 and then at peak if you think it's different?
I think if he gets a full season of at bats or even he had 283 plate appearances last year, if you bump that to closer to like 500 or 550, I think something in the 18 to 22 range is reasonable. I might trend towards the lower end of that range. And I think at peak it's probably closer to the upper end of that range. I don't think he's a home run hitter. I think you're going to get a lot of doubles, and I think you can get a good batting average out of him. I really like Wilson Contreras. I just don't think it's all going to be over the fence power.
Yeah, for me, I think that's even a little bit more more aggressive than I'd be willing to get with the power. I think the power is I think he's more 15 homer power guy. Even at peak, I think expecting 20 plus homers from him is probably not something you're going to be thrilled about. But again, like Craig said, I mean he is a very good hitter. And you know that's going to be where his fantasy value gets carried.
Yeah, I mean it's worth noting that to your point, like his 12 home runs came with a 23.5% homer per fly ball rate, which is not going to be sustainable. So, yeah, and
that's what happens when you have a 54-55% ground ball rate.
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's. It's tough. It's tough to hit 20 home runs with a ground ball rate over 50%.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So I think tamping my range down certainly makes sense in that case.
All right. So Ben, let's jump over the next guy. We'll get back to him. But how do you value Evan Gattis at this point in a dynasty league, considering all the variables in play? I mean, we thought he had lost catcher eligibility, but now he's got it back, and it looks like he may actually be able to maintain it for another year or two. He's in a great ballpark, but he's got playing time concerns. How do you balance all of that in trying to figure out where to slot him?
Frankly, I stay away from him because he confuses me. But I think where you have him makes sense, because the production you are getting right now while he's a catcher is premium catcher production. And I think we know he'll at least carry that eligibility over through 2018. And my guess would be, like you said, he sneaks another year, maybe 2 years out of it beyond that. The playing time, I don't know. I mean, it's a crowded lineup for sure, but he got about 500 plate appearances last year, and I don't really see a reason for it to drop, you know, under 400 or anything like that. So, yeah, I think he might suffer a little bit, but I don't think we're looking at a guy who all of a sudden is going to get, you know, 200 plate appearances or something like that. He's a perfectly reasonable bat for a DH.
Yep.
Well, I guess in a fantasy sense, a 320 OBP from your DH is not what you want, but you know what I mean.
Probably not. I mean, the thing we know in Houston, right, we know he's going to play against all left-handed pitchers, and we know he's going to get some at-bats against right-handed pitchers. We don't know exactly how much. He hit 290 with 10 home runs just against left-handed pitching last year, mm-hmm. and... the counting, you know, obviously the counting stats aren't going to quite be there if he's only going to get 300 to 350 at bats, even though I'm not terribly concerned that he's going to get limited there. But, I mean, he's kind of the rare example of a guy, even if he gets 300 at bats, he might still be a top 7 or 8 catcher,
which is
crazy, but it's perfectly viable.
I mean, Gary Sanchez got, what, 250 at-bats last year, and he was number 9. And I know Gattis won't have that type of average, but, you know, the other stats might be fairly in line with that. So I don't think it's very far off at all.
Mm-hmm. And if you consider what you can do if you know when he's going to play and that you if you can sub another guy in the right. mid, you know.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So, Craig, I'm going to go back to you because I'd like to ask you about Dodgers. So, what do you expect from who is Yasmani Grandal at this point?
That's a tough question and one I'm probably not qualified to answer. I think, you know, this was a tale of two halves for this season was for Grandal. We can look at his season line, which was 228. 339, 477. And then if you just look at what he did from July 1st to the end of the season, he was 267, 376, 581, which would tell you how bad he was the first half of the season. And in that span, he hit 20 of his 27 home runs. He was coming off, I think, AC joint surgery. And I think that affected him at the plate. Does that mean he's a 267, 376, 581 guy going forward? No, I don't think he's a 950 OPS guy. But I do think he can be kind of in the 800 to 850 range, which for catchers is fantastic. And it obviously he gets a boost in OBP leagues, and his average isn't going to be great. But I do think he can be better than 228. And I think expecting something in the 240 range, maybe 245, is eminently reasonable. And I think you have him in the top 10, you have him in the top 5. I think it's optimistic, but not unreasonable, if that makes sense. Like I don't mean optimistic and cast shade. I think it's trending towards an optimistic point of view, but there's a lot to back that up.
Yeah, I mean, I've been you guys know this. I've been a Grandal supporter for a number of years now. So I'm not surprised that I lean towards the more optimistic side of him, but you know, there's a lot of upside here, and you know, the power from last year is really encouraging.
Go ahead. He played in 126 games last year, and I think he's going to get more this year, being fully healthy and having AJ Ellis off the roster. I think he's going to get a little bit more opportunity there, and it's a really good lineup to be in terms of driving in runs and scoring runs. I mean, he's not going to score a ton because he's slow as hell, but it's a good lineup that drives in runs. So relative to what he would do kind of on your average lineup, I think he gets some positive benefits from that.
All right. So Ben, I'm going to start with you here. We're going to play America's favorite game. How many spots above where he would be on your list is Zach Collins on my list?
1, 2, 3, 4.
I'll preface this while you're thinking, but I aggressively ranked Zach Collins.
I think he'd be below this entire other tier. So in case you're not looking at it, you have Collins at 7, Real Muto at 8, Alfaro at 9, Perez at 10, Ramos at 11, and Darnell at 12. I think I would have Collins at 13 ahead of Russell Martin, but behind all those names.
All right. Ben, Craig, same question.
Craig is dying again, which is actually good news for me, but I'll pop back in. Basically, my argument against Collins is that he is probably not a catcher, or almost certainly not a long-term catcher. And I know you love the bat, but I guess it's a little bit like Schwarber all over again, and I don't think you're going to get that lucky twice.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a lot like Schwarber. It is in terms of how it feels, in terms of Brett's aggressiveness with him.
It's just it's a really bad position, and even if, like, I mean, Collins is a guy who is going to move quickly. He's an advanced bat. I think, you know, they're not messing around with him in any other positions at this point. Even though you're right. He's not the kind of person who's going to catch 120, 130 games a year. But, you know, there's so much potential value in having someone with his offensive upside at the position, and even if he is not a catcher, he still holds a good amount of fantasy value off the position. So it's it's certainly aggressive. I freely admit that.
Yeah, and especially over a guy like Alfaro, who okay, like, I'll give you that Collins' hit tool is better, but I don't think the power is super far off for those two. Alfaro's a lot closer. He's a much better bet to stay at the position for longer. Now, they both have favorable contextual factors for whatever that matters at this point in their careers. So I really, really don't get him over Alfaro at all.
They're really, really close. They're two spots apart on the list, but they're between the two of them, Real Muto and Perez. I think that's a pretty close tier right there for me.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Wrong, but fair.
I mean, the only thing I would say is, you know, going back to the Schwarber comparison, is that I think even fewer people think that Collins can stay at catcher. With Schwarber, it was more like how long, and, you know, is it even a season in the majors? Is it, you know, two or three, etc. I know we talked about that forever and ever, but with Collins, is he going to be there, you know, be like, is he going to be catching the rest of this season, even in the minors? You know what I mean?
And so, I don't think the bat's quite as good as Schwarber, in addition to everything else.
The bat is not as good as Schwarber, and Schwarber has a special bat. That's right.
No, I agree with that, but I think some of his specialness was gained as a prospect too.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, so I don't know if we're going back to like the inception point of the discussion. I don't know if it's as far off as it might seem now, but I agree with you. Right now, it's a very different conversation.
Mm-hmm. So let's go into the next tier. I mean, you, I'll mention Alfaro briefly. How many, Craig, over under on at bats in Philadelphia for Alfaro this year? I'll set it at 225.
I'll go under. I don't think they have any reason to push him, and I don't think Cameron Rupp is bad. So
no, and as little as I, you know, I didn't rank him on the list, but they also do have Andrew Knapp between Alfaro and Rupp. So, you know, if they did want to see what Knapp could do, they have another option, you know, on top of Alfaro. And we are coming off a season where they left, you know, they left two of their best offensive prospects in Lehigh Valley for, you know, just about, in Nick Williams' case, for the entire season, for JP Crawford's case, for almost the entire season.
Yeah,
so, and they clearly are in no rush.
I mean, people could easily look at his BRAF page or Fangraphs page and see that he got time in the majors last year, and that he's 23, or he was 23 last year, he'll be 24 this year, and think, you know, that you're being insanely conservative. And I think there might be some conservativeness to my taking the under, but he also skipped Triple A entirely. And he's, you know, it's not that he doesn't have anything to work on. I think he can, I think whether those two should have been there the full season or not, Alfaro can benefit from a full year or close to it in Triple A. So that's just my reasoning behind it.
I'm with you on that. So Sal Perez is only 26 years old, and that somehow does not seem possible. But he's, you know, he's been trending in the wrong direction now, especially with his contact rate. He had a 288 on base percentage last year. Is the original Sal Perez that we saw 2, 3, 4 years ago? Is that guy coming back at any point, or are we sort of have we jumped and gone into this distinctly low average medium power version of Perez going forward? Ben.
I think the power might fluctuate a little bit. I don't know if the average is ever coming back.
Sounds good. So we've talked about the top guys for a little while. So I think we'll do a little lightning round as we go through the rest of this list, just to see where some of these options are. So
can I just, before we start the lightning round that we always end up not being a lightning round?
Sure.
I would just say with regards to your question on Perez, I don't think the low average is, like, I don't think that skill set is gone. I really think a lot depends on how they continue to treat him. I mean, the first half last year, he hit 283, 318, 500. He's never going to be an on-base guy, but 283 and he slugged 500 over his first 76 starts. I mean, that's really goddamn good. So I don't think it's unreasonable that you could say that guy is still in there. You know, if they continue to start him 130 plus times, and, you know, maybe not making the playoffs is a good thing, because he just added those games. I mean, what the year that he, either 2014 or 15, he set the record for innings caught as a catcher, right? I mean, there's just only so much a guy's body can take before it takes a toll. And I think there is certainly a career cumulative toll, but if they start to get a little more delicate with him and just give him more time off, I think we could see a rebound in average and even a little bit in power.
Yeah, in 2014, he caught 146 games. Not played 146 games, caught 146 games, and then caught every game of their playoff run up until Game 7 of the World Series.
Yeah, I'm tired just of you saying that. So
yeah.
All right, lightning round. I just want to point that out.
Sounds good. So, all right, first question in the lightning round. Who do you prefer in terms of injured, oft-injured catchers, Wilson Ramos or Travis d'Arnaud? Ben?
Ramos.
Is it close?
It's close. They're in the same tier, but I didn't have to think that long about it.
Okay. Sounds good. Craig, feel free to jump in if you want to interject, but I will not call on you.
I'll take Ramos too.
I feel like I gave an actual lightning round answer and you're taken aback.
Yeah.
I know. I have to stop.
Okay,
Craig, Russell Martin or Brian McCann?
I'll take Brian McCann. That might be unpopular, but I'll take Brian McCann.
No, I agree.
Oh, okay.
Ben, what do you expect from Tom Murphy in 2017?
Not as much as you do, according to this ranking. I do like Murphy as like a back of the top 100 guy, but I think between his shaky defense and the swing and miss to his game, I think he's going to end up as like more of an oft-played backup than a starter for a long time. In 2017, particularly, let's say... Oh, wrong Tommy Murphy. I just tried to look up his stats so I get my bearings. Let's say he gets 300 plate appearances and hits 12 home runs.
Okay. Craig, will my appreciation for Andrew Susak be paid off by the end of the season?
Yeah, I think it will. You have him 16th on this list. I don't think that's particularly aggressive. I mean, as Ben said, like this gets bad fast. And I think putting him in a group, where Wellington Castillo rounds out the tier, I think that's entirely reasonable. I could see him doing something similar to Castillo's last season, which, was fine. I mean, it'll get you by. Yeah. Well, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe something a little less than that, but I think he has that ability. I think he can hit for power. I don't think there's going to be a ton of average, but they don't have anyone to challenge him, and so I think he'll get a bunch of at bats, and that's a good place to hit. So I think it's pretty reasonable.
Cool, Ben. If you had to take a flyer on one of these two guys, who would it be? Devin Mesoraco or Yan Gomes?
Mesoraco. Gomes is done.
Yep.
I think Mesoraco's done too, but Gomes is like the most cooked.
It's not looking great for either of them.
No, and it's particularly not looking great for Devin Mesoraco because of how Devin Mesoraco looks.
Yes. Craig, do you think there is any reason to still believe in Derek Norris?
As like a good player? I mean, he's a person, Brett.
As someone who can you can use in a fantasy league.
Boy, if you're using him outside of a two catcher league, I think that's a problem.
All right. Ben, better NL East catcher, Cameron Rupp or Tyler Flowers?
Cameron Rupp, dude. what is the
Ben's excited about Cameron Rupp.
But Tyler Flowers? What?
Tyler Flowers was not as bad as you would expect last year.
Don't talk up Tyler Flowers.
Wait, Ben. What do you think Tyler Flowers did last year? I'd like to know.
Yeah.
What do I think Tyler Flowers did last year?
Don't look it up.
I'm not looking it up. Like 11 homers, 240.
Just slash line, just pure slash line. Because
Tyler Flowers, what did I just say? 240, 290, 420. Nice.
Okay.
Oh, you got one of the numbers.
You got one of the numbers.
It's fucking exactly. 420, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It absolutely my is.
God, of course.
270, 357, 420.
Doesn't matter. Don't think it's real.
8 homers, though. Under on the homers, even.
Don't think it's
41 real. Runs batted in 281
365 BABIP, now that I'm looking it up. Tyler Flowers is trash. This is a trash question.
Well, yes, he is, but it's also a trash list.
I guess if it's a flower, it's like compost?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. I held off on Flowers puns for the vast majority of that
segment. At least thought you would go Game of Thrones with it, but alas.
Well, that would have been a reach.
Well played.
Thank you.
All right, let's do one for each of you in the last outside the top 30 on this list. Craig,
don't say Bruce Maxwell to me, you son of a bitch.
Who's I'm just warning Bruce Maxwell to you.
All our commenters love Bruce Maxwell.
Look, okay, I'm giving you the option of who you want to talk about. I'm not telling you to talk about anybody. Who outside of the top 30 on this list do you have confidence in who could rise up in the next 12 months?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say, God, this is a wasteland. I think the obvious answer to me is a guy like Brett Cumberland, who is a catcher who can hit and was just recently drafted. But there's a lot that we don't know about him there. I think outside of that obvious answer, this is a nightmare, Brett. What are we doing here?
I like Villarreal in this tier.
Yeah, I mean, Mabrus Valoria or Villarreal. I don't know how to say it. I'll be quite honest.
I said Villarreal, so it's almost certainly Valoria.
Okay. Yeah, I think I had originally locked onto him and then moved on. I think you're right, Ben, that's the other name here. Do you have someone that sticks out to you?
He's who I picked for my sleeper and get to know. Yeah. I think Tomas Nito is interesting because we'll know what he is like soon. You don't have to wait on him forever. Like, you're going to have to wait for some of these guys in low A. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if he's trash in 6 months, just cut him and there's nothing wrong with that. So I think that's good for sort of like a cheap upside play. The rest of this list is terrible. I think Austin Hedges might be a tiny bit too low now, and I can't believe I'm saying that because I don't like Austin Hedges ever since we saw him drop that ball.
third catcher.
Below Austin Barnes, below Kevin Plawecki is a little disrespectful. Below Luis Torrens, who has done nothing ever, I think Hedges should be a little higher up.
Yeah, and the last name I throw out is, he's 31, so it's not much outside the top 30, but Tyler Stevenson, if he's healthy, I'd like to see what he can do. You know, he had the wrist injury, which really crushed him, and then he missed a lot of time. So I'd be interested to see what he does.
Yeah. But I prefer to – I have no idea how it's pronounced, but I will pronounce it Mybris Valoria just because – well, because I like the Pixies, but that's a totally different thing altogether.
I was hoping it was Mabrys.
I think it is Mabrys. I think it's Mabrys. Yeah, but I don't know. We miss Mao so much. R.I.P. Mao.
I mean, do we?
Wow. Wow.
That's okay. He doesn't listen.
Yeah, no.
No, there's no way he's listening to this. The guy who I will throw out really quickly is Garrett Stubbs, who had a really interesting year last year, and he's probably nothing, but he might be able to hit.
You ranked him right. You know, you want to know who I would name who's not even on this list?
Who?
Kybert Ruiz, or whatever. I don't know how to say his first name either.
Let me guess. He's a Dodger.
He is a Dodger. I think if you're going to put Manny Pina on here, I think he can earn a spot.
Hey, if Andrew Susek doesn't work out, Manny Pina is your starting Milwaukee Brewers catcher.
Oh, I like how Brett is giving Craig Dodger shots when Kevin fucking Plawecki is on this list at all.
He's 42 on the catcher list. I mean, he might as well be dead.
It's not good, Brett.
As long as I'm taking people who are off the list, I'll take Enya.
Welcome back to episode 79 of Tino. I hope you used that break to make your own top 50 catcher rankings. And if you did, please email 41 through 50 to... @gmail.com, which I don't even think that's your actual email, but I didn't want to give your real one out. Okay, so for the second half of the podcast, we are going to switch gears and talk about another list that Brett has created, and that's his top 50 signees from 2016 Dynasty list. And I think the number one reason we do this is because it's difficult to sort of keep track of, you know, all the draft picks and all the international signees who come on over the course of a year. And for those of you who play in leagues like TDGX, where, you know, you can't pick up guys mid-season just because they've signed or been drafted, you're getting ready for off-season drafts. And then the second reason is because I butcher so many more of these names because I've never even heard them before. So if you think I suck at pronouncing regular minor leaguers or major leaguers who I've, you know, heard the pronunciation of, you know, 50, 60 times, just wait until we get to Matt Thais. Matt Thais.
I think it's Thais.
Thais.
See? It's going to be a lot of that. All right. We will start at the top. And Brett, how hard of a decision was it for you to rank Nick Senzel over Corey Ray?
I literally wrote it in there as soon as I opened the file.
Well, they can't see it. We're on a podcast, Brett.
No, I meant when I opened the file to write the list.
He's saying it was immediate.
It was an immediate decision. Thank you, Craig. Yes.
Yeah, well, that's also the first sentence of your Senzel write-up. So I was trying to give you a softball to open this up, but...
There's not a ton of debating who the top pick is this year, Ben.
Brett. Brett, comma, it doesn't seem like you had a lot of trouble deciding to rank Senzel over Corey Ray. Why is that? Talk about ranking Nick Senzel over Corey Ray.
Talk about it.
I like, yeah, that answer is going to make it seem like I like Ray less than I do. I actually like Ray quite a lot, but I mean,
Senzel over Nick Senzel.
I
double
would
first name.
Yeah, two first names is kind of rough.
That's fair. That's a fine reason.
It's also afflicting Zach Collins in a almost. Like, it's very close.
Well, anyone with the name Collins.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, he's really got three first names if you think about it.
Who?
Zach Collins.
Is S a first name?
No, it's two fucking Collins.
Brett, talk about ranking Nick Senzel over Corey Ray.
We're just going to be stuck in neutral all the rest of the episode, huh?
What happened?
I don't know. What happened there? Everything
the
just time, cut
the
out.
The timing was amazing because Brett said we're just going to be stuck in neutral. And then I thought he was just like waiting me out. So it got to like 12 seconds and I was like, what the fuck is happening?
Never play Brett and chicken.
Seriously. All right. So Brett, we'll start at the very top of the list and I'll ask you this question in my best sports writing voice because I was indeed a journalism major undergrad. Talk about ranking Nick Senzel over Corey Ray.
You know, there's really not a ton of debating over who the top pick was this year, Ben. But Senzel was the easy choice. He's got the well-rounded game. He's got the short distance to the majors. He's even got a slightly better position. But he's just about as he's not the kind of, you know, Chris Bryant guy with huge upside, but he's just about as safe of a college bat as you can reasonably have in a normal draft year to provide fantasy value in the next, you know, 2 to 3 years.
Fair enough. Craig, do you agree with that assessment? Is it closer to you? What are your very quick thoughts?
Yeah, I think he's the top guy. I think he's someone who that if the Reds wanted to be really aggressive with, which they have no incentive to do, but, you know, they could start him at AA and get him to the majors by the end of the year. I don't think that'll happen, but I think he has the talent and pedigree and polish to do it. I like Ray's upside a lot as well, but I think Senzel's the obvious choice too.
Yeah, I don't know what they're waiting for in Cincinnati. They only have 7 years left on that Joey Votto contract.
I think they're waiting for Brandon Phillips to leave town.
Jose Peraza's clock is ticking. They gotta.
He's gonna.
Jose Peraza and Dylson Herrera is gonna be 30 before he gets a starting job there.
Good.
He's gonna get one over Peraza. He's gonna buy a fucking house across the street from Great American Ballpark, and he's just gonna sit on the front lawn.
All right, so that's Senzel and Ray. Collins is at three. We've spoken more than enough about Zach Collins today. Craig, Jason Grom is at number four. A little aggressive maybe for a pitcher, but maybe not for a pitcher as good as Grom. What say you?
Yeah, I think that's right. I was one who pushed Brett on this ranking a little bit when we were kind of going back and forth and creating it. I think if you're going to take a chance on a pitcher, it needs to be someone as talented as Grom is. And, you know, there are a lot of risks and there are a lot of – I mean, he's a pitcher, you know, and he's a high school pitcher at that. But – the upside is tremendous, and I think he has the fantasy upside to justify an aggressive ranking like this. And I don't know that he's necessarily I think he is someone who that it could click pretty quickly. I mean, I know, you know, I just mentioned the risk, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a slow ascent. Although it that is of course a possibility.
And Craig, I'm going to stay with you for this next tier because, you know, in the write-up, Brett sort of described why he ranked the next three guys how he did. And those guys are Mickey Moniak, Kyle Lewis, and Blake Rutherford. But I know in general you're not quite as high on Moniak as a fantasy prospect, at least. So is this the order you would have these three in, or would you do something different?
No, I mean, in all honesty, I'd probably have Lewis fourth. And so I if we're just talking and limiting it to these three, I'd have Lewis fifth. I know the knee injury is scary. I really liked Lewis coming out of the draft, and I thought he I just think he's the best player. I think he's the best blend of average and power and speed. And I, again, the knee injury is going to affect that. It was a particularly rough knee injury. I get that. At the same time, Moniak just doesn't excite me. I don't think there's a lot of I think the things that he's good at in fantasy are going to end up being contextual, and that could end up, you know, that could mean he's in a really good situation if the Phillies kind of progress the way they look like they are. But if they don't, he ends up being a good average and, you know, potentially a relatively empty good average with some stolen bases. And I think that's a profile you can find anywhere. I like the more balanced profile that Lewis offers.
Fair enough. Brett, you ranked Lourdes Gurriel at eight. And I still don't really know how I feel about it. So just explain sort of your thought process here, putting him before some big time college arms from the last draft like Quantrill and Puck, and ahead of his brother in Houston and Matt Theis.
Sure. So we'll kind of move backwards through that. I mean, there's no question that his older brother is by far the better baseball player, was the better baseball player at the same age. I mean, it is an incredible shame that Ulysses Gurriel did not come to the majors, you know, 7-8 years ago. And I think we'd be talking about him the way that, you know, that we talk about pretty much the biggest, you know, whoever we think is the biggest Cuban superstar to come over, whether it's Aroldis Chapman or Yoenis Cespedes. I think, Gurriel is that level of star. Lourdes Gurriel is not that level of star, and he's not the guy with the flashy tools, but, you know, he's been one of the best young players in Cuba, you know, growing up. He's got great bloodlines. I mean, his father was one of the great Cuban hitters as well. Obviously his brother we just talked about. And I think his skill set lends himself to being a good overall player. He's not the showcase type. He doesn't have plus raw power. He doesn't have plus speed. He's got a little bit of everything. And it's a question mark as to where he's going to end up defensively. I think you could see him sticking at either second or third. I think he's more likely to stick on the infield than he is to move to the outfield. But, you know, especially in a pretty good situation in Toronto, I think he's going to surprise some people who were probably a little turned off when he got less money than was being discussed. I don't see him as being a fantasy superstar at any point. But I think he's pretty close to major league ready, and I think he can step in and be a starting fantasy player in just about all leagues almost immediately when he gets called up, and he's got a little upside on top of that. So it's more of a safety thing for me, but I feel pretty comfortable in his baseline of skills to put him into the top 10 there.
So can I just jump in, Ben, real quick? I'm sorry, but since we're talking about Cuban players and one just signed recently, and I from what I know of him, which is relatively little, I think it's kind of a similar type situation. The Rangers signed Luis Yonder Lao. Where would you have him here, since this came out before that signing happened?
I would.
I'm assuming it's lower, but I just am curious.
I think it's way lower, and we'll get to this. There is another Cuban hitter who I kind of like quite a bit in the 30-ish range in Randy Arozarena, and we'll talk about him. But I would say Yonder Lao is, he's got some speed. He certainly doesn't project to have very much power. It's a question where he ends up. He was a shortstop in Cuba. He's probably a third baseman, maybe.
Yeah, this second baseman. Defensive thing is why I thought of him while discussing Lourdes.
Yeah, and it's really a very, it's a very common thing among Cuban hitters that come over. Unless if you're an infielder coming over from Cuba and you're not a no-shit shortstop, you've kind of played everywhere. I mean, Lourdes Gurriel played first base in his last season in Cuba, and he would have been a starting shortstop for 75% of teams based just on talent, but because of the makeup of the team, he played all over the place. And it's a pretty common profile. I think Lowe would probably he might make the 45 to 50 range. Honestly, I don't know if I'd have him on.
We don't spend time on him. I figured it'd come up.
Yeah, he's a name that's worth paying some attention to. I like him better for fantasy than Andy Ibañez.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, Brett, I'm going to ask you to elaborate a little bit on this one question and then move us into more of a false precision round. Interesting to me that you have Kevin Maitan at 13 and Delvin Perez at 23. I think Delvin Perez is a much better known prospect, and people will be surprised to see Maitan ahead of him, and if not, at least surprised to see a 10 player gap. So I guess what is this, just a combination of you being high on Maitan and low on Perez, or what is your thought process here?
I don't even think I'm particularly high on Maitan. There are people who I talk to who would have had him, a bit higher on this list than I had him. I think it's probably, I want to say it's moderate. It's probably a little bit more aggressive than moderate, but I think it's being low on Perez. I mean, it's not so much that it's a side effect of the PED thing, and it's not because he got popped for PEDs, but it's because his profile was different after his profile was different for a couple of months, and if he's a guy who has 30 power, then 23 might even be slightly aggressive. But it's a little bit of a negative hedge against the player who I think he probably is, and not the player that he flashed. I mean, if I was confident that he was the the guy who could, be a five tool shortstop, he'd clearly be pushing the top 10 on this list, probably in the 10 to 15 range, probably somewhere near where Maitan is. But I just don't have confidence that that's him.
And just as a preview, we have the Cardinals list running tomorrow as well, or today when this comes out. So you should be able to read about him on the top 10 from a non-fantasy side too.
Look at that plug. Very professional.
And, And on the fantasy side, through Mr. Ben Carsley.
Well, yes. Yeah.
Ready for this? Well, another transition. So let's stay on the Cardinals for a second. Craig, I'm going to ask you, we've talked about players, you know, minor leaguers who are a few years away from contributing. Brett has the final boss at 14, and then Eric Thames down at 20. Obviously, we know O is good right now, but he's also older and a pitcher. We don't know if Thames is good right now, but he's younger and potentially a power-hitting first baseman. So is there one you prefer to the other? Do you think Brett has this right?
Yeah, I do. I just think that, I mean, there's a lot to like with Thames, but there's a lot of risk there as well. And he, you know, the reality is that he might just not be much of anything. And, you know, I hope that's not the case because I think he's really fun. But, you know, it's not even like he's all that young. He's going into his age 30 season. O is really good, and
yeah, he is.
And he's gonna get saves right now. I was tempted to say, and I'm glad you brought him up. Like I might have had him further up this list, just as a preference for current impact. But you know, I get that it is a dynasty list. But you know, saves are something that you shouldn't necessarily pay for or go chase. But if you have him, I don't think you're trading him for Matt Theis. You know, it might just be where you are in your contention cycle. And as you said before, Ben, that's maybe a little bit of a cop out. But I don't know how many guys below him. You know, I wouldn't trade if I had. Oh, I'm not trading him for Lourdes Gurriel personally. But you know, I don't know if I'm necessarily making that trade if I'm a Gurriel owner either. It's just one of those tough situations, I think.
I think that's all very fair. All right, guys, it's 11:50. We are going to get through the rest of this list in 4 minutes and then do our spiel and get out. Brett, in this 21 to 29 segment, if you had to pick one player who you think, you know, has a chance to maybe be a top 50 dynasty prospect at this time next year, who would you pick, if anyone?
I'd probably say Justin Dunn.
Yeah.
Just because I think if there's more confidence that he's a starter in the next 12 months, I think he could jump up lists pretty quickly. And the Mets, you know, if you haven't noticed, the Mets are pretty good at developing arms, especially ones that show some predilection for a slider. So, Dunn would be the guy I would pick there.
I think all three of us like Dunn. That's pretty exciting. It's been a while since we've all agreed on a prospect, I feel like. So this is exciting to me. Craig, want me to stick with the same question for you, or do you want me to bump down a tier?
Whatever you want to do.
All right, I'll go the other way. In this 21 to 29 tier, is there anyone who you just don't have optimism in and who you think is a little too highly ranked?
It's less that there's... I don't think that there's anyone really too aggressively ranked here. I think the guy I'm interested to know the most about is Josh Lowe and see how he transitions to the pro game and what he does. Because I think he could take a step forward, like a big step forward, or be someone we're not even talking about come this time next year. And not on this list, obviously, but just in general. Like, he's just out of sight, out of mind type. So I'm interested to see what he does. He's maybe one of the more volatile assets in this list.
Ben, did you see my young Pope joke in the write-up?
Brett, you know you don't read.
Did you read it? I did that for you.
You know, I think I did read it, and it's just left my mind because the young Pope went from very funny to me.
I was going to say, Ben is over the young Pope.
I'm a young Pope hipster, man. I was in on it first, and now I see all these people like goddamn Chris Swick making young Pope jokes, and it's killed it for me.
His high school is Pope or something?
Yeah,
Brett?
Pope High School. That was where he was drafted out of, yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, it's not. This is not you. This is me. This is on me. Brett, I want you to. I agree with your low ranking of Will Craig down at 31, but I think
Amen.
like some people will be surprised based on, you know, college bat drafted in the middle of the first round. So in like two sentences, explain why he ranks this low.
There's just not a lot of confidence that he can hit upper level minors pitching, let alone major league pitching. So with all apologies to Wilson Carmen, who's our staff Will Craig apologist, I started him a little bit higher on this list than this, and he just kept slipping down further and further, and he ended up outside of the top 30.
And he's a first baseman.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Another prospect we agree on. All right, Craig, one more for this tier. So we'll go from Will Craig to Will Benson. And basically my question is, will Will Benson hit better than Will Craig, or will Will Craig hit better than Will Benson?
Will Benson will hit better than Will Craig. Well, I actually probably for – you know, Benson's such a project. He's the guy I'd rather take a chance on, just because I think if it clicks, he's a big friggin' deal. But there's a lot of things that need to click.
Craig, how bad do you feel for Orioles fans that Cody Sedlak couldn't even make this top 50?
I do feel bad for him. I think I kind of like Cody Sedlak, but I think the concern that he's not a starter and the concern that the Orioles can't develop a starter is a real one. So
yeah, I'm just happy Cody Sedlak is still alive.
Yeah.
After being an Oriole for this long, you gotta.
He's not hurt yet, so that's positive.
And Brett, for the last one, this is my favorite question to ask people who make lists like these, because I feel like as soon as I make a list, I immediately hate one of my rankings. So, what ranking do you already hate?
What ranking do I already hate? That is
anywhere on the list.
That's a good question. I hated putting Riley Pint anywhere. So probably where he ended up, even though he ended up smack in the middle of this list. And I don't really want to move him higher. I don't want to move him lower. I just hate that I have to rank him.
Well, you certainly did quite the hedge ranking him 25th.
I did, yeah.
I can understand why. All right, any last thoughts before we move on to annual?
Nope.
Perfect.
No.
All right. Well, Brett, thank you for providing two lists this week. Very exciting, hot Brett list action. Before we leave you, we just thought we'd give you a little sneak peek of the BP annual. Obviously, all three of us wrote again, and this year Brett edited it, which is a pretty huge fucking deal, along with Aaron Gleeman. So please buy our book if you haven't before. You definitely should. I'm guessing most of you have bought it in the past, but I think it came out rather nicely this year. And aside from the one guy who will probably once again be upset that the players aren't listed in alphabetical order,
I he's think my it's shout out to this guy.
That is my favorite Amazon review, but lots of great stuff, lots of Joe Kelly-esque stuff. So with that in mind, we're each going to take a turn reading you one of our fellow Tino broadcasters' comments. So anyone want to go first?
Why don't you go first?
All right, I will go first, and I am going to read Brett's comment. It's actually a line out on Sean Gilmartin. So we have the high point of Sean Gilmartin's season was his July engagement to CNN's conservative talking head Kaylee McEnany, which doubled as the best and possibly only story of someone hurling junk from the left and someone hurling junk from the right coming together in 2016. A very, very strong lineup.
Yep. I think that should be a full comment.
It's almost long enough to be.
Yeah.
See, that's a very Brett thing to do, though. Okay, I write a lineup. That should be 40 words. Here are 900 words.
Yep. It's a lot like one of our lightning rounds.
Exactly.
A little bit. I guess I'll go next. I'm picking one of Craig's. I know this chapter well, so I went back and forth to which one I was going to read. I'll pick this one, which is probably my personal favorite. This is Josh Fields' comment. Consider the child star that never quite made it. Someone who was clearly supposed to be something big, was sold to something big, and wasn't a flame out, but also wasn't as advertised. Perhaps it's Jonathan Silverman for you, or Brecken Meyer, or maybe even Mena Suvari. Expected to be a quick mover as a first-round reliever with big heat and a wipeout slider, Fields stalled. Consider it the failed pilot of his career. He wasn't heard from for a bit, but he was honing his craft, and he got a background part for his MLB debut in 2013. He's since established himself as reliable filler, chewing a scene or some innings if need be, and everyone knows his name, even if it's mostly because of who he never became. Fittingly acquired by Hollywood's team midseason, Fields flourished under the bright lights, posting the best ERA of his career and outperforming his FIP for the second time. The success came in a lower leverage role, and his flyball tendencies mean he might never be suited for the bullpen starring role, but good character actors never lack for work.
I'm surprised that's your favorite.
I really like that one.
Yeah, it worked out well. Shout out to Patrick Dubuque, who helped me workshop failed child actors on that one. He's an invaluable resource for depressing facts.
He truly is.
Yeah. All right, so I will close it out with one of Ben's comments. There's a lot to choose from since Ben had two chapters and cranked them out like a champ. It was extremely impressive as someone who only had one, and I did not envy him in this task. So let's go with Christian Vasquez. All right. If you thought The Walking Dead had 2016's ugliest moment with a bat, you didn't catch much of Vasquez as a hitter. The defensive wunderkind finished 56th in true average among catchers with at least 150 plate appearances, behind Juan Centeno, Kevin Plawecki, and the sentient remains of A.J. Ellis. Seriously, Vasquez's at-bats were so lifeless, Peter King kept asking baristas if they'd heard about them. Our catching metrics still love Vasquez as a framer, but his arm looked more good than legendary in his first post-Tommy John season. And his much-ballyhooed rapport with the pitching staff? It mattered so much in April that the Sox screwed with Blake Swihart, but so little by July that Vasquez lost playing time to Ryan Hannigan and Brian Frickin' Holiday. In the era of three-year contracts for Jason Castro, players like Vasquez have value. But his bat needs some quality alone time with Melisandre if Vasquez is to be anything more than a backup. That comment had everything.
That is a fantastic comment.
I promised myself that I would work the Peter King tweet into at least one of my comments. So it felt good. It felt right.
Yeah, I had some. That one worked a lot better than some of my first ones, which is like I tried to work a penguin who had been cucked into a comment.
that was good. I like that. I think it worked.
And it was a little forced, but you know.
It worked.
Yeah. And Craig, thank you for continuing to be my friend. The way my mind works, like, I just when you're in this comment mode and you're trying to like make connections to pop culture or think about things that have recently happened or being witty, your mind can take some really like dark turns. So Craig, thank you for never publishing some of the like national tragedies and other like things I had worked into fake comments to never see the light of day.
I at this point I basically am everyone's GChat person that will never publish any GChats. So yeah, it's a role I cherish.
It's much appreciated.
Yeah.
Oh God, what did Enya get a line out or a full comment this year? Welcome back to episode 79 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Please rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever platform you use to listen to this podcast. We're sorry that we did take a small off season, but we're back now with tons of hot and fresh new content for 2017. So if you do enjoy listening to us ramble on once every other week for some reason, please leave us a good review. And as we just urged you to do in the last few sections, make sure you check BP because we're tackling a new position, everything fantasy and everything minor leagues, basically, for the next several weeks. And please pre-order the BP Annual 2017. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in chat, Discretionista Goldstein. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell. and you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening, and have a good night. Well, yeah, we spent 40 minutes on six good players, so.
Yeah, we spent the good chunk of the time talking about the interesting players, though, so.
No Sandy Leone talk, though.
Yep.
No, he's not. Really bad, George.
Well,
is he?
I will be back in 1 minute.
He is.
He's really bad, but those 6 weeks were magical. Now?
We're definitely not finishing by midnight. Sorry.
I'm hanging up at midnight.
Come on.
Those are great 6 weeks.
When we, oh, you mean for Sandy Leone?
For Leone, he was like Johnny Bench. It was amazing.
That was,
he hit like 400 for 6 weeks, and then didn't get a hit ever again.
Pretty much.
Wasn't your Leone comment pretty good, Ben?
Yes, it was.
It was like he ran out of whatever magical elixir was making him go.
Yeah. It was sad.
Now we get Christian Vasquez. Wait, seriously, what are they going to do at catcher? It's Christian Vasquez.
They'll start the year with Leone and Vasquez, and then they'll realize Leone can't hit, and Blake Swihart will be hitting like 290 in AAA. They'll bring up Swihart.
That's ironic, because that's the exact opposite of what happened last year. So
yeah, pretty much.
That's ironic, or that's erotic?
It's both.
Didn't he hit a home run off Betances last year, though?
He fucking crushed a homer off Betances.
I almost fell out of my chair.
It was his only homer of the season, right?
Yeah.
To be fair, I'm pretty sure Brett Nicholas hit a home run off of Dylan Betances also.
Yeah, but he only gave up like four all year, right? Like,
Nicholas can't catch.
So, Brett, you should write an article about people who have hit home runs off Dylan Betances.
Yeah, actually, you should. That'd be pretty funny.
Yeah. If everyone who hit a homer off of Dylan Betances stood on each other's shoulders, how tall would they be?
Not taller than Dylan Betances.
That's, yeah, there you go.